This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The story you're about to hear is considered by many people to be a classic example of a grave mistake in the war on terror. In September 26, 2002, my guest Maher Arar was detained at JFK Airport while in transit on his way home to Canada from vacationing in Tunisia. He was interrogated about alleged links to terrorists. 12 days later, he was deported by U.S. authorities to Syria, where he was put in a tomb-like cell for more than 10 months, beaten and interrogated. Arar was born in Syria and moved to Canada with his family at age 17. He's held dual citizenship since 1991. He was released from Syria and returned to Canada in October 2003. The Canadian government eventually opened an inquiry into his case. In 2006, a Canadian commission cleared Arar of all terrorism allegations. He received an apology from the Prime Minister for the Canadian government's role in his apprehension and was awarded over $10 million in damages. Arar's deportation by American authorities was part of the secret policy known as Extraordinary Rendition. Before we meet him, we're going to talk about rendition with Jane Mayer, a reporter for The New Yorker. She writes about Extraordinary Rendition and Maher's case in her bestseller about the war on terror, The Dark Side. Jane Mayer, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let me start by just asking you to explain Extraordinary Rendition.
Well, extraordinary rendition is a tool that's been used in the war on terror. It's a means of basically kidnapping someone against whom there are outstanding legal charges and rendering them to justice. At least that was the old-fashioned version of what it was. In the Reagan years, the idea was to pick up suspects against whom there were already sort of major rap sheets for crimes already committed. And what happened in post 9/11 periods was that instead suspects started being picked up who were just seemed to be sort of suspicious characters, but not necessarily against whom there were real rap sheets or kind of criminal records. And it was part of the preventive model that the Bush administration had put in place, where they wanted to be able to pick up suspicious characters before they committed crimes.
Why was Maher Arar's name on the terror watch list in the first place?
Well, he had the misfortune of placing on a rental lease for an apartment he rented in Canada the name of a man who was the brother of a terror suspect. And later, when the suspect himself and another man were being questioned brutally and in a very coercive kind of way about any possible other terrorists they knew, these suspects were asked specifically about Arar because of the name on the lease. And at that point, these suspects gave false confessions implicating him, saying, oh, sure, he's a terrorist too.
So how did the Immigration and Naturalization Service determine that Maher Arar should actually be deported and sent to Syria for interrogation?
Well, you know, much of this still remains mysterious because the public officials in the United States have not answered all the questions here. Unlike Canada, they have not had a major internal investigation to try to get to the bottom of it. In fact, they have pushed away all efforts to investigate this. So much is unknown, but you can see that there were rendition papers, they described it actually as an immigration action, signed by the number two at the Justice Department, Larry Thompson, who authorized that Arar should be picked up and sent to Syria. Arar had dual citizenship at the time. He was both a citizen of Canada and a citizen of Syria, which was where he had been born. But he hadn't been in Syria since he'd been a teenager, and his family was in Canada. And Arar protested immediately that he didn't want to go back to Syria. Everything he'd ever heard about it from his parents was that the law enforcement process there was unjust and brutal, and he didn't want to be subjected to torture immediately. That's what he thought of. And so he protested, but they didn't listen to him.
The United States doesn't exactly have a relationship of cooperation with Syria. In fact, shortly before Maher Arar's rendition, President Bush added Syria to the list of outlaw states that he describes as the axis of evil. So how did the United States work out this cooperative relationship with Syria in which the U.S. would send somebody like Maher Arar for interrogation and Syria would cooperate and report back the results?
Well, it's an amazing situation because obviously we don't regard Syria as a close ally in any way. What actually happened was they sent the U.S. flew Arar in a very sleek Gulfstream jet, not directly to Syria, but first to Jordan, which worked very closely with the United States in the war on terror. And then Jordan was commanded by the U.S. to hand him over to Syria. So there was a kind of a cutout in the process. But in the war on terror, all kinds of convenient alliances crop up. I mean, the United States has worked with many brutal regimes, such as Uzbekistan and Syria, too.
How is Meher Arar finally released from Syria after months of interrogation?
Well, his wife just took up the issue and wouldn't let it drop. And so she continually protested inside Canada and pushed and finally got enough of a kind of a protest going that the ambassador then had to check in on him. And at first, Arar was too frightened to tell about how brutally he'd been treated. But anyway, eventually, Canada realized what a mistake this had been, and they finally worked to let him out. I mean, the Syrians, who are not known for coddling terrorists, after interrogating Arar under really brutal circumstances, came to the conclusion he was not a terrorist and that this was a mistake.
So if his wife hadn't worked that hard, or if Meher Arar wasn't married, who knows if he'd still be alive or where he would be?
Very much so. I think, I think that he might still be wasting away there.
Canada has apologized to Meher Arar and awarded him over $10 million in damages. What's the status in the United States legal system now?
It's quite amazing. He is still considered by the United States to be worthy of being on the terror watch list. The reasons for this have not been shared with the public, so I don't know exactly why. At some point, the Justice Department had a private meeting with some members of the Senate to try to convince them that Arar belonged there. And those senators said they still were unconvinced that he should be on the terror watch list. But this means he can't set foot in the United States without being arrested.
Do we know if the Extraordinary Rendition Program is still going on?
Well, it's still very much on the books. I mean, the Bush administration describes it as one of its most useful tools, and they've certainly never apologized for it, and they've continued to argue that it's legal. The sticky spot legally for the program, though, is that under the Convention Against Torture, the United States is not allowed to transfer someone to a country where they will be, where there's a greater than not chance that they'll be tortured. So yet, under the Extraordinary Rendition Program, suspect after suspect, hundreds of them apparently, have been transferred to countries where torture is routine. And so it's very hard to see how they've gotten around the Convention Against Torture in structuring this program.
You write about Meher Arar's story of extraordinary rendition in your book, The Dark Side. What do you consider to be the importance of his case and his story?
Well, one of the most important things is that in the view of Canada and in the view of Syria, two countries that probably agree on very little, they agree that Arar is not a terrorist. He was a mistake. He was an innocent person who, because of this extra legal process, which took place outside of the public view and outside of checks and balances and all the kinds of reviews that are usually put in place to avoid mistakes, an innocent man was locked up in the equivalent of a grave for almost a year and beaten, and might still be there if not for the protests of his wife. So it's just a harrowing story.
Jane Meher, thank you very much for talking with us again.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be with you.
Jane Meher is the author of the bestseller The Dark Side and a reporter for The New Yorker.